right then, farming.
Farming.
Right out of the gate, I'm just saying.
Here we are. We're in.
Well, yeah, because that's what we're going to talk about
this week.
Idioms about the farm.
Yeah.
I don't get to the farm much. Do you get to the farm?
No, I get uncomfortable leaving the city. Even close to the city, I find myself finding that things feel to me as though they are, I'm in the country now, but I'm clearly just a minute away from the city.
Right.
And that's me. There's no reason.
You see those hay wheels?
I get uncomfortable driving through the middle of our state here in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
To see my cousins who live out in central PA in Harrisburg and stuff. And I find myself saying, what? There's nothing out here. but there's farming, and that's very important because feeding people is really the most important thing one can do, I think.
We have a lot of potatoes in Pennsylvania, and with the psilocybin thing coming on, there's somebody trying to make Pennsylvania the capital of mushrooms. I don't know if that's...
I was not aware of this.
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess we grow a lot of mushrooms. I don't know that we're the capital, but somebody seems to think we are.
All right.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm all for burgeoning industries of farming, drug-related or un-drug-related.
We're in Pennsylvania, everybody.
Yes, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Of America here.
Of America. Yeah. So farming.
On whole nine yards.
On whole nine yards. What do you have to lead us off with?
Oh, exciting. When I drive through the farmland, sometimes you'll see lovely animals around you.
Sure.
And I'm a fan of, I know both of us are a large fan of animals. We think they're great. And they should live great lives,
safe and happy
and healthy.
Yeah.
So we personally, you and I, we literally don't have a cow. In many ways, we don't have a cow here, and we don't eat cows either.
Right. No cows.
No cows. So mine is don't have a cow. Jay, don't have a cow.
Don't have a cow. This is the idiom.
This is the idiom.
So. Use it in a sentence.
So if you were, you know, maybe agitated or like starting to get anxious about something and you're like, I don't know if we can do this. I don't know. And I'd say, Jay, don't have a cow. It's going to be okay. I'm saying, just relax, right? It's going to be, we're all going to be okay.
So don't spaz.
Don't spaz. Sure. I wrote down, don't have a crap attack, which is from Bob's Burgers.
Mm.
But yeah, it's basically having, if one was to have a cow, they would be growing extremely agitated or anxious or perhaps becoming enraged.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't want that. So don't have that cow.
Don't have the cow.
Yeah.
But why? Why the cow?
Why indeed? Why indeed? Now, I know what you're thinking right now, what I'm going to say, and I'm going to say it.
Go ahead.
But... Have you heard of a popular animated show called The Simpsons?
Yeah. If there was ever a time for it, I've heard of this show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
This one is less shoehorned than
no,
some of
it's
them.
Right.
Yeah. While Bart Simpson has t-shirts and slogans and stickers and everything you could imagine that you could slap a brand on and sell. He says, don't have a cow, man. Pretty much episode one, you're off to the races of The Simpsons. And it lasts for a long time. They change up the phrases as you go through the seasons. But I'm just going to leave it there because they did not invent this phrase.
Shut up.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with The Simpsons.
See, now I would have thought if you asked me to bet, I'm betting they made it up.
I was right there with you, and I was hoping to go down that road, but I'm hopping off the road already. We're off that road.
But then, wait, they also had probably season one, episode one, Cowabunga.
I'm not sure. Early season one for sure. Yeah. I'm not saying episode one is the Simpsons roasted on an open fire, and that's when they find Santa's little helper. It's a Christmas episode. I don't know if he says cowabunga in that one. And I actually don't know if he says don't have a cow in that one. But he says it early on in the first season. I didn't pull it because, again, I don't want to waste my Simpsons intros.
Yeah, no.
No, we don't want to do that, I know.
No.
So that's 90s, 89, 90s, really. There are people alive today that have grown up in a world that only know The Simpsons being a part of it. I grew up in a time when we didn't have The Simpsons and we had to look forward to something to cheer us up. But anyway, we're going world that one. Right. Yeah. But we're going to go even further back in time. Not too much farther in as we go. 1982, we're going to say. This is 1982, yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is where we take the good, we take the bad, we take them both, and there we have The Facts of Life. Do you know this show, Jay? This sitcom show?
Okay, so The Facts of Life, it was a show that I just didn't see it because of the time.
Right.
You know,
sure.
You know, I was just not watching TV at the time.
Right. I was, well, I guess one when this episode came out, so I must have seen reruns or something. But it's loosely, you know, a bunch of foster girls growing up together under the stead of the wise Mrs. Garrett. Or Miss Garrett? I think Mrs. Garrett, yeah. Anyway, season three is called Mind Your Own Business. One of the ladies, Joe, says to Blair, after Blair has become kind of incensed at what's going on, she says, "Don't have a cow, Blair." And, you know, I feel like primetime TV from my generation really embraced this phrase. So I'm using Facts of Life, but it's all over the place growing up in the 80s here. We can even go a little further back to the 70s to another animated show, which I personally do not care for, Scooby-Doo.
That came up last time.
Did it?
Yeah, we just talked about Scooby-Doo because of meddling. And I said it meant a negative thing because I was tainted by Scooby-Doo, but I wasn't positive that it was. But anyway.
Yeah, Shaggy says it all the time. Don't have a cow. Scoob, which was Casey Kasem, right? Was the voice actor for Shaggy. So Casey Kasem's out there saying don't have a cow all over the place in the 70s. I mean, honestly, I get why you would enjoy the show, but it's just so formulaic to me. It's every episode's the same episode, guys.
Sure.
Just come on. Give me something else. I don't care if the Globetrotters are here or not. It's the same episode.
It's the same episode.
So even though, you know, Shaggy's saying it, we got it on Facts of Life. We're getting it on across, again, 90s, 80s television just coming at me. Even though Bart gets the t-shirts and the duffel bags and the stickers and all of it, the OED tells me that this, and other folks as well, tell me that this phrase is from at least the 1950s. And when in the 1950s, Jay?
Well, no, when?
I don't know. Unfortunately, that's what we get. A 1959 Denton in Texas, just a quote, "He won't let me watch rock and roll shows. He'd have a cow if he knew I watched 77 Sunset Strip." 1959.
Denton?
Denton Record, I guess, in Texas.
Quotes. There you go.
Yeah, sorry. 26th of March, even, if you want to get that specific.
But 1959. That's the end of the 50s.
Sure. Yeah. It's true. The new Partridge Dictionary of Slang in Unconventional English gives me a 1966 definition of have a cow, to become emotionally overwrought, to lose control. United States. This is an American phrase, the cow side. It does have a sister phrase, perhaps mother phrase. I couldn't find a timeline that the British say. That is, don't have kittens. Same kind of way. Don't have kittens. Don't worry. And both of these phrases really, I mean, at their heart, they do just draw on imagery of something that would be, you know, really unpleasant and possibly full of anxiety and troublesome. A human birthing a cow or kittens would certainly make everyone in the room pretty uncomfortable, or at least, you know, some kind of, if you were to actually birth a calf, you know,
that'd
be strange.
Whoa, damn painful.
It would be strange, yes. This is all of the info that you can find. in this kind of normal phrase that we like to do. We look, okay, here's this, here's that, what do we got? The origins remain uncertain, for sure. This, I kept pushing, and I like to keep looking, as we do. And I came across Pittsburgh writer, novelist, poet, Gertrude Stein, in 1926, wrote a poem published called "As a Wife Has a Cow, a Love Story." I never read this poem or anything by Gertrude Stein, but it's fascinating. She uses phrases that really repeat over and over, and they morph and they repeat and they morph and they repeat, and they're very, very stream of consciousness-y. These stream of consciousness, like experiments, they call them rhythmic essays or portraits. It sounds like they're designed to kind of just like evoke this focus and excitingness of being there and hearing this and seeing this and being a part of it. And I saw someone say that she's somewhat literature's answers to the visual art styles like cubism, plasticity, and collage. I'm going to try to read just a little bit of this poem.
Mm.
It's long. It's not super long, but it goes on in the same fashion in which I'm reading it, and I'm reading it properly. It's challenging to read. Okay, I gotta move this out of the way, because it's the words repeat and things are next to each other and you have to pay attention. So I'm gonna do my very best. It may not be 100% accurate. Nearly all of it to be as a wife has a cow, a love story. All of it to be as a wife has a cow. All of it to be as a wife has a cow, a love story. As to be all of it, as to be a wife, as a wife has a cow, a love story. All of it to be as a, all of it to a wife. All of it as to be as a wife has a cow, a love story. All of it as a wife has a cow, as a wife has a cow, a love story. Has made as it has made, as it has made. It goes on.
Yeah.
Like these ways. It's fantastic to read it, and it really does excite you and put you in this thing, because you're hearing this and feeling this, and this repetition and these words are really, it's wonderful. I mean, I've never read anything quite like this. It's not unlike...
Come out to show them.
Right, exactly.
Come out to show them.
It's a similar idea. It's not unlike modern beat poetry, where you can see where these things kind of morph through stuff. It's cool. It's really cool. It's a lot like that, and it goes on for a minute, and it's intense, and it does excite you and make you feel some way. All this to be said that this doesn't necessarily relate to what we're talking about. It is just a cool thing about a cow in literature that people would have read. And one could make an argument that authors put these ideas forward and people read them and then they take them on to language. 1926 to 1959 gives a nice 30-year gap where people could absorb this kind of story and possibly morph it into their own way of language. But the origins are uncertain, as I said. I did see the term cow-cow in the slang jargon and Cant Dictionary from the late 1800s. And cow-cow means to be very angry. This is from Pidgin English is how it describes it. So not technically, it is a slang from the start. It's not a, you know, it's not a dictionary. Having a cow is uncertain. It is not from my favorite animated TV show, The Simpsons, which people may have thought.
That's good that it isn't, I think, that it may have a richer history of roots.
Yeah. No, I feel you.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. No, I agree. I don't know. Yeah, I hear exactly what you're saying. It does have a richer history than just a snotty little kid talking back to his dad or whomever, teachers, whatever. So how are you farming today?
well, me, you ask, what, this old thing? I only wear this when I don't care how I look. Haywire.
Haywire.
Ray, I have haywire, everybody.
Haywire.
This one is like I've been getting a number of words and idioms like this one, where the answer to what it really is or where it came from is close to what you thought, but not really it. and twists how it's used or thought to maybe be used differently than we use it.
All right.
Perhaps also plus. So, haywire.
Yeah.
Being out of order or having gone wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The radio went crazy haywire. I don't know if that's a sentence. Emotionally or mentally upset or out of control.
Okay.
Yeah. See, there is someone also that purported to have a definition that goes like this. It was an expression used by electronics engineers in the 1940s when their circuit designs were at an early experimental stage. The wiring of more complicated circuits at that stage often resembled a mass of hay. That is hogwash.
Oh, that's so pretty.
Mm.
I like that one. Because I was also going to comment that I really use it in reference to electronics or equipment. I don't think I've ever said it about a person or emotional state, as you defined.
That was, yeah, one of the other definitions.
Yeah.
But it is more commonly used and appropriately so for some gear, let's say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's.
So some early uses, and it's not incredibly old. So 1928, the Helena Independent. Where's Helena? Illinois?
Helena, Montana.
Helena. Oh,
but
yeah.
There's probably other Helenas.
Yeah. 1928. The team's anxiety to score let their passing game go haywire, with many wild heaves finding marks in the bleachers.
That's funny.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
It's a wild heave.
Finding their marks in the bleachers. That's some good sports writing.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
They don't write them like they used to.
No.
Well, 1905. This is not one that I'm going to dance around 17 different ways. I'm just going to take a sort of a direct hurdy-gurdy dance right to the point. Hurdy-gurdy, yeah, because I watched a Jimmy Page video earlier today.
Nice.
Where for some reason, Jack White and The Edge got to watch Jimmy Page teach him how to play Kashmir. I don't know okay. Sorry, everybody. But,
nice.
1905, the Haywire outfit. So it was often called, often used in this way. What a haywire outfit you are. And what's more, it was generally used initially in the logging industry.
Okay.
And if you had poor equipment, you were a haywire outfit. Now that, I'll give you the snippet from the Bessemer Herald.
All right.
Of 1912, Bessemer, Michigan. Some few months ago, we were solemnly informed by the officials of the Michigan Telephone Company that the antiquated haywire outfit in use here would be replaced by a modern exchange as soon as possible. Well, as soon as possible. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
I'm gonna be fat, wealthy, rich as soon as possible, too. But yeah. But saying the haywire outfit logging industry, that might begin to point you in the direction of what this is.
All right.
I'll take it a further step deeper into the revelation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unless the revelation is painfully obvious to everybody, and I was the dense one.
I'm still waiting for it, too, personally, because I haven't felt it yet.
I think there was a local rock band in the Pittsburgh area back when called Haywire as well.
Sure.
Well, here you go. Haywire, also known as baling wire, is a thin, flexible metal wire used to bind together bales of hay. So,
nice.
So those blocks of hay didn't just stay cubes like by will, by right. sheer intention of the farmer.
Yeah. By sheer act of will.
Yeah. I mean, if they could do that, I mean, we've already transcended.
Yeah, we can do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But apparently there's wire holding them together.
And they call that haywire, huh?
Yeah. See, you could tell we're city folk.
Seriously.
But yeah, so there's that.
Okay.
But what they don't tell you and want you to find out by doing research
yeah.
is that, all right, so it was always, at least in the 19th century on, this thin wire made by the giant roll after giant roll.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, for baling hay, you can imagine, okay, it's the 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
You work on a farm. You start to have, by the early 20th century, you start to have other kinds of motorized gear. But even before that, you had plenty of mechanical farm gear,
yeah,
which breaks. You have posts and fences and all kind of doors and wood and things.
Yeah.
All of it needs fixing, and it needs fixing fast because you're a farmer, you got work to do.
Yeah, no time for this fence hole.
And you did not yet have duct tape. But what you had,
yeah,
was something broke. You had some baling wire,
yeah,
some hay wire.
Hay wire.
So here's the thing. Yeah, so you jury-rigged anything that was broken,
yeah,
with this soft, springy, easily pliable, thin wire.
Just wrap it up.
Wrap it up, break it off,
yeah,
and move on to something else. That will hold for now.
Yeah.
Until I can get back to it and drill a new bolt hole or whatever I got to do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, there was one nice humorous observation that I came across, but it was something like, it collects rust very easily too, so hay wire was good to have around if you needed some rust. But I like to rust things for the aesthetics of it, but I can't imagine that a farmer in 1890 needed that. I
need some rust, yeah.
If you were a hay wire logging outfit, you were an outfit with poor equipment that was held together
with
hay wire.
I see.
Now, there seems to be a bit of a conflicting agreement on some things, but I'm a gavel slammer, and I dug around. So there is a small contingent that thinks when you patch something up or fix something with the baling wire,
mm-hmm,
hay wire, it is a temporary fix.
Mm-hmm.
And if this part, let's say, is a moving thing, like there was a joint of an equipment that kept moving, the bolt fell out and you tied it together with hay wire,
mm-hmm,
that hay wire is going to break.
Yeah.
Too. It's a temporary thing.
Yeah.
And when it breaks, things snap and fly all over the place, and the wire snaps and everything. And that is the genesis of the idea of what is hay wire.
Yeah, things get a little crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
But the real origins of it are that it needed the wire in the first place. You understand the difference? There's a subtle but impacting difference between these two constructs.
Yes.
One idea is it's the snapping and breaking, and the other idea is that it needed to be held together in the first place. We use it more like the latter, like the snapping and breaking.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But when you understand the history of it, you can understand a richer use of it in that way. You know, it went haywire in that it needs to be held together with duct tape, and therefore it's crap.
It is haywire. Yeah.
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 So
nice.
So that's what I learned about. Hey, I wouldn't have seen that coming.
I was going to make a joke when you started. Is it just wire for hay?
Yeah. I'm glad you didn't do that. You'd have just blown me up.
Yeah. I'm like,
I'd have been like, okay, done then. Thanks.
I guess next one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome though. I like it. Like it's like slipshod. You're just, it's not crazy. It's just patched together.
It's just patched together.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see what I mean?
It's
like just off center of how we use it.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, we've just stretched. Because we've come so far, at least many of us, I'm sure there's farmers still hacking stuff together with the baling wire.
Yeah.
But for us, we're just so far removed from that kind of idea that...
Right, like the breaking of it, the popping and the falling apart. Like, oh, that's the hay wire.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And just hearing those words though this thing went haywire, we don't even try to listen to the two words that make it up and say hay and wire. You know, we don't assume that they have any rich history. At least I don't.
No, because, I mean, where you were heading in the first place, it's like, oh, okay, a conglomeration of wires. It's just like someone tossed a bunch of hay on the thing, and that's all the wiring. Or, you know, or the wires are so mismangled that they look like just a bunch of nest.
Right.
Which you're like, okay, cool. But right. Nice.
Whole Nine Yards is sponsored by Big Science Music. Big Science Music is a Cannes and One Show award-winning original music and sound boutique, providing scoring, sound design, radio, podcast, and audio post-production services for the advertising, film, and video industries. Big Science Music also offers ADR, casting, and project management. Big Science Music's reels, full capabilities, and more can be found at BigScienceMusic.com. That's BigScienceMusic.com.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, we're back.
Back.
Yeah, farming.
Yeah. What do you have to farm some more?
Well, I'm going to tell you.
Alrighty.
Here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really say it, but I think sometimes it's funny to think of it, or some people use it in a way that is humorous. When pigs fly. When pigs fly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pigs might fly is it also another incarnation, perhaps earlier version.
Pigs might fly.
Pigs might fly.
Huh. I don't know that one.
It's a humorous, ironic remark used to indicate the unlikeliness of some event or to mock the credulity of others.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Right?
When pigs fly.
Right.
Right. Is how usually, I'm guessing it goes.
I might start on papering the back bedroom tomorrow. Yes, and pigs might fly.
Ooh, I like that way. Okay.
Mm-hmm, right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Papering? Who puts wallpaper up?
Yeah. I mean, there's history to this, so there's history to the uses.
I see. Mm-hmm. Right. Time's a flat circle.
Yeah. So, enjoy.
All right.
If you might. You know, more direct example here, and I'm going to quote one from 1835.
Oh.
That is a readily handy. The autobiography of Jack Ketch. But it's an autobiography of Jack Ketch written by Charles Whitehead. What? So it's like the title of the book is the autobiography of Jack Ketch. That's not fair, man. You can't do that.
So is this fiction?
1835. Yes, pigs may fly, but they're very unlikely birds.
Oh.
1732. I'm going backwards now.
Oh, wow.
Because that was 1835.
Yeah.
1732.
100 years.
Yeah, and the reason I opted to do this one like this is not too far away from haywire. This is also one that is fairly straightforward. It just has a path that it came.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see it this way sometimes. Just track it back.
Mm-hmm.
Go get that book off the shelf. So, 1732, again, I say to you, nomologia, a collection of proverbs, maxims, ooh, and adages that inspired Benjamin Franklin and Poor Richard's Almanac.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, inspired.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and our friend here also has a clever turn of the tongue. Was the first to explicitly single out the pig as a ham-fisted aeronaut. I like that. that is as likely as to see a hog fly.
Yeah.
So 1732, we're seeing it like that. So we go back, 1616. We're back there. Sam Pepys was a young lad.
Yeah.
And this has the stuff that we love. A short dictionary for young beginners. So a small dictionary for young beginners.
Yeah.
Put together by a fellow, John Whittall. And he uses it in a little bit different way, which shows it being very early. pigs fly in the air with their tails forward. And when I first read this, and second and third read it, I just tried to picture the pig flying, but the little tail tucked under them.
Oh, like pointing forward.
Or, yeah.
I see, not butt forward.
Right, but actually what he meant was, and backwards. So they're flying in the air backwards.
Yeah.
But he didn't say that. He said tails pointed forward, which...
Right.
Which convolutes, you know, it makes it hard for me to create that image.
Yeah, like, oh, so his tail's pointed forward? Like, no, he's fine, ass first.
Right.
Yeah, I got you.
But how was I to know? But we trace it back farther yet, some say further. What?
It would be further.
Yeah, further.
Yeah.
1552, a more underformed incarnation, I give you Francois Rabelais.
All right.
In a book, 1552, I said, Gargantua and Pantagruel. He creates this dramatic event, and this giant Pantagruel, I have to say that again, fights with the chitterlings and its champion, described herein as a huge, fat, thick, grisly swine with long and large wings, like those of a windmill. So you had a popular book in the 16th century that at least conjures that image. Did that loan credence to lore and other writings or speak so that by 1616 it made its way to that next permutation? I don't know.
Yeah.
And also made me think, oh, swine. If you forget, so I checked that. Swine goes way back, PIE, Proto-Indo-Euro, Old German, Swine, and it was the same creature.
It's always been the pig, as we say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this one, it's sort of an obvious thing. There were things along the way where people had tried, and there were some documents of uses of people saying when cows fly, when horses fly, this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And probably that the pig flying being a stout, earthbound, you know, gravitationally challenged little creature would make it more preposterous to imagine flying, or a funner visual. I say funner. I could say that.
Sure, we can say anything we want.
Yeah.
We've got microphones.
Ha. So,
yep.
One other little tidbit was that, you know, Lewis Carroll, you touched on this in Alice. Who's the Duchess in Alice? This Duchess thinks Alice has no right to think. I've a right to think, said Alice sharply, for she was beginning to feel a little worried. Just about as much a right, said the Duchess, as pigs have to fly.
Nice.
Right.
Lewis Carroll.
Now, Lewis Carroll, what was that, 1875 or something?
1800s, but I don't know. Sorry.
Yeah. But that's pigs fly. It really is sort of an obvious thing that just made its way through time in various forms. But probably in their early 1600s was that citation where we first saw it really put into play.
It surprises me that it's that old, I guess. I mean, it makes sense, but that we've stuck it through it and it's kind of been the same.
Yeah.
I mean it is a very great image.
When something works, you stick with it, like John Candy.
Yes.
So have you what?
I have a hard row to hoe. But really, it's not that hard.
No, hard road to hoe.
See, you said road, right?
I did say road.
Yes, that is, as we get, that has come up before, an egg corn, not an egg corn, an egg corn, where we hear it. And I swear, until, I don't know, probably my 20s at least, maybe longer, I always thought it was road, because again, I'm not a farmer.
Right.
I don't hoe.
Right.
Or, yeah. So I did in all earnesty, think it was a hard road to hoe. And people do. And that is that's a fun aside that's out there. And we accept that phrase as well. And you see it in print. The road.
Yeah.
Yeah. This one, 1818 from the OED, he loves to contend with difficulties. And if he had not a hard road to hoe, would place himself in some sphere demanding effort in order to extricate himself. We have an 1810 New York Spectator as well. True, we have a hard row to hoe. Neither of these uses include quotation marks in the 1800s. So we can assume that this is already understood. The idiom is already understood by early 1800s. It's the earliest I could find in print. But yeah, so what is, Jay, what is hoeing?
You know, Ray, I guess it's making those little rows so you put the seeds down there in the trench and then there's a little pile next to it of the dirt you took off of it.
I'm so glad that we think the same things. They're incorrect.
That's incorrect.
That is incorrect. I also thought that. I looked up a video on hoeing. And in order to start hoeing, you take your hoe and you drag that hoe across the ground. And you
wait,
use
the hoe.
The hoe.
The hoe is a flat.
The hoe is like, okay, so you got a stick. You're holding on a big long handle and it's got like a metal, I'm just gonna very, very broad, a metal L at the end, we'll say. Flat, broad L, you know, right?
Yeah.
Well, just for examples.
Yeah.
So you got your handle, you put the flat end, the L, so the L is...
Put the flat end in, it's take the flat end out. So
you look like you might want to dig with it, but you don't dig with it. You don't dig with a hoe. You hoe with a hoe.
Yeah.
So you drag that hoe across the ground and you do it.
To what end?
To sort of pull the weeds and cut them off the roots and also pull maybe a little bit of soil up. I saw that you kind of, you hoe down about a half an inch-ish. and it looks like, I don't know, such a great way to weed. Because you just use this thing and you just pull the damn weeds off.
But this is figuring that there's nothing else on your ground but weeds. This is like early in the season, and we want to get the weeds out of the ground before
know.
We plant, right?
Yeah,
you can't
right.
do that once you've planted. You got to pull your good plants
you gotta,
out.
You can scooch it around. I think after, but yeah, if they were little seedlings, you couldn't hoe.
You couldn't
Because you'd
hoe.
Rip them out. Yeah, you'd have to get down there and weed them with your hands and knees, which is not pleasant.
No.
Yeah, so yeah, you're right. I guess at a certain point, you can start hoeing things. Like there's a window, there's a hoeing window that closes on you and then reopens. Because once the plant's bigger, you can hoe around it, right?
I'm guessing. I don't know.
From what I watched, again, I thought it was the same thing. You use this little dude to put a hole and you put your seed in it. But no, you use it to weed. And I'm like, why didn't someone tell me this all those years ago when I had to weed all of the whatever? Anyway.
You can't use it to get weeds out from between bricks and stuff.
I had to weed my driveway.
You can't do it.
No, not that. I could have hoed around the stuff I hate, hostas. I could have hoed around those.
I need a better. I'm gonna watch some hoe videos. I don't understand.
It's great. I was enlightened, to this.
All right.
You know this one. You know, so back in the 19th century, which is where these quotes are from. But I mean, again, we've had this for a while. The farmers didn't have, like you were saying, they had mechanical machines. They didn't have.
Motorized
machines. But even then, you know, what are you doing? You're out there, you got your stuff. So these old-timey farmers, unaided by futuristic robot hoes, they in fact did like hoe their own rows of crops. Rows in, you know, like if one was to have a garden, your row's not that long. Maybe, you know, 8 feet. I don't know how big your yards are, if we've got yards.
Yeah.
Which does not compare to a farm with, you know, perhaps at least acre long rows of corns and soybeans and other things that we grow.
Yeah.
Apples. Mm. So these rows would have kind of stretched basically.
There aren't trees, though, I think, the apples, but go ahead.
Yeah, but they still have to farm.
Yeah.
You still have to plant an apple tree. yeah, right.
Let's just go with the corn.
Yeah, that's fine. Corn. Yeah. Great. So yeah, these long rows had to be weeded, you know, like we're saying, if it was early, perhaps by hand, if you're just getting out there, or earlier than you plant, then you can just get out there with a hoe in one hand and like your sweat rag in the other, and you see this, you know, this row that extends off into the horizon, and you're like, well, better get cracking. So you literally do have a long row to hoe, and the amount of work, oh, I didn't define it. You have a difficult or arduous task ahead of you if you're out there.
That's the definition.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And as you'd see, the farmers would be out there. But yes, it is a literal use that we use have become the idiom somewhere between, I'm going to give it, I'll say late 1700s, because by 1810, we don't have quotes. So we had to learn what it was as an idiom, but we have the quotes from 1810. And like you touched upon earlier, the long road to hoe is acceptable. People say it. It's fine.
But there's nothing to hoe on.
You can't
hoe
a road, right? Exactly. That's the gag. You're like, you don't hoe a road, you know?
Yeah.
You don't have a long road to hoe. Just the row.
Just the row.
It might have been like a few years ago that I realized that I was saying it wrong, right when I learned what put a pin in it means.
Mine was just a few minutes back now. But if somebody, your friend, was going away to study to be a doctor and they were just leaving high school, you would say, wow, man, they got a long road to hoe, right? That's how you would use it.
You would say,
oh, man.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work you're going to have ahead of you.
A lot of work you have ahead of you.
Look at how far you have to go with just this little hoe in your hand.
Right.
Yeah, and you got to do it.
Yeah.
No one else is doing it.
No, you have to do it.
Yeah. So that one's a little short and sweet. So I am going to pivot to some listener thoughts.
Listener thoughts.
Mike H. says, he just writes in, I've been meaning to tell you how much I love your show. So here it goes.
Oh, nice.
You guys do a fantastic job and are super entertaining. Learning while laughing is a neat thing to have happen to me. The way you feed off each other is darn right professional and right up there with Abbott and Costello.
Wow.
Thank you,
I wonder
Mike.
Which one each of us is.
I don't know. Please continue to do the show for as long. I'm a good straight man.
They're the who's on first people,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. But I do laugh a lot, so it's tough. But I can be a good straight man. Anyway.
You can't laugh if you're straight.
No, I know. Please continue to do the show for as long as you can. I'll be along for the ride the whole time.
Yeah, it's a long road to hoe.
It's a long road to hoe. Thanks, Mike, for writing in. We super appreciate it. Mike wrote into our email address.
Whoa.
Which is heyyou@wholenineyards.org. But if you wanted to write in, you could write into Whole Nine Yards Pod.
And the Whole Nine Yards Pod, I wonder if that nine, do they spell that out or is it a number?
I think we use a number nine.
Number nine.
Whole
Nine Yards Pod on
Twitter, Reddit, and Instagram.
And then Whole Nine Yards Podcast, also with a number, Whole Nine Yards Podcast.
I think it's gone to Meta, or is it still Facebook?
It's still
okay.
Facebook. But
still Facebook.
Yeah, it'll be Mimi for Business or something that does that.
But Mike got to us through the email. Hey, you.
Yeah, the email still works.
Always works.
Yeah.
Thanks for writing in, Mike. We appreciate the feedback.
Yeah, Mike.
And we will do this as long as we can. And that was very kind.
Yeah.
Don't let it go to our heads.
It already has.
Yeah.
All right, then. That having said that, I'm Jay.
And I'm Ray.
And we're not idioms.
Whole Nine Yards is written, recorded, and produced by Big Science Pods. Learn more at wholenineyards.org or contact Whole Nine Yards by emailing heyyou@wholenineyards.org. That's heyyou@wholenineyards.org. Whole Nine Yards theme music composed by Big Science Music.